Welcome to the 18th episode of Season 3 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Monday the 11th of October 2010, and in this episode we're going to review Maverick Meerkat and listen to an interview with Tim Dobson about Young Rewired State, recorded at OpenTech last month. We will of course cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, command line love, and go over all of your feedback. I'm Tony, and with me this week is, well, there's four of us here. Seems to have been a while since we've been in the studio, given our Dublin trip last time.
Oh, yeah.
But Alan's here with me again.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? All right?
Yeah, tickety-boo, thank you.
Good, good, good. And what have you been up to lately?
Well, what with Maverick, as we've been talking about, I've been playing with that and finding a few bugs and chasing a few bugs. A couple of my favourite ones was the bug where the trash or recycle bin was called something different all over the place.
In three different places or something.
Yeah, I actually got a screenshot with it having four different names on the screen at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah, so filed a bug, and the translation people, the doc team made a decision on what it would be called. And this is only in British English.
Right.
So we've decided it's called a rubbish bin now, not trash, not recycle bin, not
like
waste
that.
Basket. It's a rubbish bin.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that going to come out in an update?
No, it's done.
It's done. Oh, right, okay.
I mean, in the release candidate, I think it was still
inconsistent
in various places. In fact, I think Tux Radar reviewed it and they pointed that out, that it was a bit inconsistent. But luckily, it all went through and now it's definitely called the rubbish bin. I think there's only one place left and it's not.
Right. Well, that's just rubbish. And Laura is here as well.
Hello.
How are you? All right?
All right, thank you. Just made it here from the train station.
Yes, well done.
Dedication.
Yes, yeah. And what have you been up to?
I went to see Doctor Who live yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Live at Wembley. Yeah.
With you.
With me, I know.
With you.
Short memory.
Yeah. it's all for effect. It was very good.
It was very good. Lots of monsters and Cybermen.
But hang on, David Tennant was on telly last night. How can he have been live?
He's not the Doctor anymore, for a start.
Oh, yeah. There is that.
And even Matt Smith wasn't live.
Oh.
Nigel Planer was.
Huh?
He was in it. Not playing the Doctor, playing another character. It's quite complex.
It is. There's lots of monsters, basically.
It's basically either a rip-off or an homage, as they say in French, to the 1970s.
Do they really? Do the French really say that?
They do say that, yes.
Right.
To the 1973 story, The Carnival of Monsters.
You know that story quite well, don't you?
I've seen it once or twice.
Right.
Establishing my geek credentials. And rejoining us, Glutton for Punishment. He clearly didn't get too much too much negative feedback after the last time, is Mark, who's just sat on our sofa. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Sat in my spot.
Yeah. a lot of love for you after the last episode.
Well, can't blame him.
Oh, the ego has landed, eh? And so what have you been doing, Mark?
I finally upgraded my work machine from, I think I was running Jaunty, to Lucid. With a slight bump along the road, but I managed to fix that, and now it's all working very smoothly.
So you've just upgraded to 9.10?
No.
Oh, sorry, 10.04.
LTS.
Right. Yes, sorry, yes, you're right.
Are you going to stick on LTS?
Yeah, because it's at work, I never have the chance to upgrade, really, which is why I've waited so long, because I can't really have any downtime when I can't be there to develop if I need to.
Right.
So that's why I've not gone before now, and now that Jaunty was being end of life this month, I think.
Yeah,
if I've got that right, 18 months, isn't
months,
it?
Yeah, that'd be about right.
I figured I'd better do it, otherwise I'd end up with an unsupported system.
Yeah. Okay, and you also you went to the lug meeting, and
yes,
we popped along, and you bought a bit of kit that didn't work.
Yeah, my Guru plug server from Global Scale, which was having problems connecting to the network, but when I got it home, it worked fine again. So I've been setting that up and doing all sorts of fun servery things, because I've never had an always-on machine before. So,
it's quite a small form factor.
Yeah, it literally looks like a Ethernet over mains adapter. And so everything's sort of within that housing. It's like a system on chip with gigabit Ethernet port, wireless, Bluetooth and USB, sort of all in one little thing. And it's quite pretty and has nice flashy little lights.
What architecture is it? Is it ARM?
It's ARM, yeah.
Ooh, so very low power.
Yeah, running on Debian stable.
Both Tony and Mark at this point are making small box shapes with their hands just to show you exactly how small this thing is.
Just to give you all listeners a picture.
Yeah. Oh, like this, that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, cylindrical.
Yeah, no, actually you could fit a square item in there.
Yeah, oh yeah, I see. Yeah, you're gesturing that, or gesturicating, or whatever the word was.
Gesturicating. Gesticulating wildly.
Gesturing.
That's it.
And so, Tony, what have you been up to?
I'm sure I've been doing some geeky things. I found out my old school runs Ubuntu. I went back for a memorial service, one of my old teachers, and chatting to the head of IT, who was head of IT when I was there and is still head of IT now. And,
it's nice when nothing changes.
Yeah, and they're running Ubuntu on some netbooks and stuff there, so that's quite cool. But mostly I've been doing a lot of running, because I'm doing the Great South Run in just under 2 weeks, as this podcast comes out. That's a 10-mile run in Southampton, in Portsmouth, sorry, and that's 24,000 runners or something.
Wow.
So I'm going to be one of those. So watch out on Channel 5. I think it's on live.
Oh, is it really? Is it going to be on telly?
Yeah. I don't think it's just following me. I think it might be following
people. Oh, that's boring.
But I'm doing it for Help the Hospices, and if you would like to sponsor me, it's all in a good cause. It's all for charity. You can go to justgiving.com/Tony Whitmore, and any little amount that you can give is very welcome for a good cause.
End of shill.
End of shill, yes. I don't like to talk about my charity work.
Except to the few thousand people who download this podcast.
Exactly, you know, it's all in a good cause.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it. I think we can get on with the show.
So yesterday was the 10th of the 10th of the 10th. Which was the day that...
Or, if you're in America, the 10th of the 10th of the 10th.
Of course, yes. They do it the other way around, don't they? And that was the release date for Ubuntu Maverick.
Yes.
And it's quite good, I think.
Yes. I've been running Maverick for several hours now.
Did you upgrade or clean install?
Yeah, no, upgrade. Upgrade. Well, I've been running the development version, so it was probably a couple of months out of date, so it was an upgrade to the final release version.
What sort of machine was it on?
A laptop.
Okay.
Quite a reasonably good laptop. But yeah, it's looking pretty sweet. Yeah, they got rid of the blobby wallpaper, and it's now a sort of mushy wallpaper.
Yes, it is. It's less blob, more mush.
Yes.
Can't wait.
Have you tried Maverick at all?
I haven't, no.
Okay.
I was learning statistics instead today.
Okay, good.
That's not a good excuse.
Mark, have you tried?
I've tried both Ubuntu and Kubuntu on VirtualBox, just quickly, just to see what had changed.
Ah.
Interesting. Excellent. Okay, so what is new and good and wonderful in the latest release?
It's a new slideshow. The installer has changed again. So it's got like a new kind of set of screenshots and stuff.
I really like the slideshow. I thought the information it gave about each bit was a lot more sort of useful to users than just saying, well,
your computer software is brilliant.
Yeah, yes. That was sort of what it said before. But now it's, you know, these are what you get. And this is the other things you can install which do good jobs as well. So it says, like, how the GIMP is available if you want it.
Right. Yeah, for
just
the naysayers.
For tab.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like to say, but yeah. And also, it starts installing before you finish answering the questions.
Oh, yeah. What were you saying about that?
That was a bit freaky for me.
Yeah, it's a bit spooky.
But it's quite, once you know it does that, it's quite cool that you can, like, you know, you've got a little progress bar going along the bottom of the screen while you're typing in your name. That's quite cool.
So what kind of things do you have to put in before it even starts?
Which disk you want to install it on.
Oh.
There's not much in the language. That's about it.
There's not many options, though, are there?
No, not really. What else we got? Rhythmbox has got a feature where you can tweet what you're listening to.
That couldn't be annoying in any way.
Yeah, I used it once to demonstrate that you can tweet what you're listening to. I haven't used it again since.
This is the sort of thing that people were doing on IRC years ago. It was having automatic status updates that said what you were listening to, and everybody got annoyed and kicked people for it.
Yep.
I suppose it's harder for them to kick people from Twitter.
Just
you can block people from Twitter. Yeah.
And you say that links into the Ubuntu One Music Store as well.
Yeah, it gives you a link. If you're listening to a song, you can press a button and it will find it in the music store, and you can press a button to say, you know, I'm listening to this song, and it will provide a link in the tweet that links directly to the music store to try and encourage other people to buy it from the music store.
Okay.
If they're using Ubuntu.
Yeah. If they're using Ubuntu. I don't know what what happens if you're not using Ubuntu, whether you just get a broken link or something.
It just downloads an ISO for you.
Yeah.
And begins to install it before you finish answering the question.
Would be cool. Not at all.
And there's Shotwell, of course, the new photo manager, replacing F-Spot. Mixed reviews, really.
I've not used it in anger. I've imported some photos into it, and it was pretty quick, and it felt very like iPhoto, the nice bits of iPhoto, where you can, you know, you just say import all the photos, and it says, oh, well, there might be duplicates, and it ignores the duplicates, and seemed to work.
That's what he said was his big push, was to make it quick and do the import.
When we put Bruno Green.
Yeah.
At least one photographer friend of mine who I've spoken to has sort of said, well, it's got some promise, but seems to be missing quite a few features over F-Spot. And I know we talked when we interviewed him, they were talking about it is slightly different audiences.
Yeah.
But perhaps for more sophisticated photographers or whatever, they're going to stick with F-Spot for a while, I guess.
And it's F-Spot still in the repository.
Of course, so, yeah.
It's just the default app.
Mm. And there's been the usual sort of upgrades to all the core GNOME apps and stuff, like Evolution and whatever. Not that I use it. Although, I'd be interested to know if Thunderbird 3 is any more stable on under Maverick.
Mm.
I have a lot of problems with that.
It's interesting, because there was a discussion recently online where Mark Shuttleworth got involved in a blog post about the fact that they might consider switching from Evolution to Thunderbird.
Oh, I remember, yeah, seeing the post. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, at the same time, oh, I hope they fix all the problems before they do that and made it less dog slow.
Mm.
But yeah.
But it couldn't be as slow as Evolution.
Evolution's got a lot quicker.
Has it?
Yeah, I find. I've never had a problem with it. Everyone keeps telling me it crashes lots, and I don't get that. Yeah. I don't know why. It
doesn't crash as much as KMail.
This is the whole extra field of crashiness we've got introduced into the show.
I still prefer KMail, but it does crash a lot.
It does bring a lot more variety, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've got extra apps that could crash.
Yeah,
they all begin with K.
Ooh, all of them. No, all of the ones that crash.
One of them begins with an A and ends with a capital K.
Alarok.
Yeah,
we all knew that one.
We could play Hangman. UK podcast Hangman. What app?
That's so sad.
Save that for the Odd Camp live show.
We've got the new font.
Oh, yes. Or have we?
Yes, we have.
Is it completely finished?
No.
Right. Oh. So when you say we've got it, British...
The font is there. The
font is there.
And
it, but the UI is using it.
Yep, it's the default font for certain elements, not everything. So it'll be for the desktop user interface, I think not for documents. So if you go into, on a standard Ubuntu install, if you go to settings, preferences, appearance, system preferences, appearance,
mm-hmm.
And then fonts, you can see that there's lots of categories for where the font is used and not documents.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't know why.
Is it not as readable, perhaps, as some of the plainer fonts? Because it has got a certain... I mean, it's great for short dialogues and stuff, but it's
I quite like it. I've been using it for a long time now, and I quite like it.
Is it finished yet?
No.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
When you say documents, do you mean like OpenOffice and things like
that?
Yeah. Well, wasn't one of the ideas of it that it looks better on LCD screens? So maybe if it doesn't look as good on paper.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be a good reason not to use it for a document then, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And I've heard a few people say it looks a bit Star Trek-y, like from the Next Generation font.
Oh, yeah, okay.
From the LCARS or whatever it's called, the computer interface they use on.
I was expecting it to appear on the boot screen and the shutdown screen. It didn't on my laptop.
Oh.
I still had the old, just like a monospace.
Yeah.
Like the development
I was worrying about, wondering about that, but I was only running release candidates.
Oh, hang on, but you were doing it in VirtualBox.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no problem with that. Have you got an NVIDIA driver?
Pass. No, I don't think it is. I think it's all Intel.
Oh.
Goodness.
Oh.
Mm. Interesting.
I'll double check, but I think it's all open sourcey stuff. I might be wrong. But is a known bug for with NVIDIA, is there?
Well, yeah. Because the NVIDIA driver doesn't support kernel mode switching.
Oh, okay.
So you can't have the pretty boot up screen, you end up with a horrible ASCII.
It looked, yeah.
Horrible.
That looks like I probably have got NVIDIA then.
Yeah,
it sounds like I have.
Bless.
I'm running VirtualBox and I don't know about it.
So does it start up any quicker?
I don't know.
I say that like it's not fast anyway, which it is.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. Actually, my desktop does start up pretty quick. I've got a clean install of Maverick on my desktop. And okay, that's a fairly pokey machine, but I can hit the power button, turn away, and not do much and look back and it's the log on screen. Yeah, and it's there with the drums.
Apparently there's proxy support for Ubuntu One file and notes synchronization, but not contacts or bookmarks or other CouchDB stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that's not all working. There's been a few complaints about that.
Does that include the music store in the file synchronization thing?
Because
that goes into your files, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the file sync stuff works, but I think there's still problems with some parts of the Ubuntu One stuff. I'm not sure which bits.
I'm still using Ubuntu One, and I used it on my Maverick.
You sound surprised.
Well, it's only because everybody else goes on about it. But I tried it on Maverick today. I hadn't enabled it on that machine before. And, yeah, it kicked into life and brought down the files.
I might give it a go again with Maverick, because I tried it and then switched to using Dropbox, because I just found it wasn't... It just at one time just decided to stop recognising the fact that I was connecting to it at all.
Right,
but
that's not ideal.
It does that. Yeah.
I'm quite liking the Ubuntu One Music Store, though. I'm trying to get as much. Not that I buy a huge amount of music, but when I
have you actually bought stuff from it?
Yeah,
Wow.
Yeah, it's not important what. Don't worry.
Hannah Montana.
No, not Hannah Montana.
Cheryl Cole?
No, it really doesn't matter.
I don't mind saying I bought Cheryl Cole from the music store.
The actual person?
She's only small.
Yeah. How many kilobytes? But yeah, so that's fine. And there's a few bits missing as well. That we already talked about F-Spot has gone from the default install, but also the software sources menu item disappeared.
Yeah, it's just hidden. Because now you get, it's just one less thing to get to on the menu. So you get to it through Update Manager, there's a button, or through the new Software Center.
You can so get it's through there. Moved rather than gone.
Yeah, I think it will throw a few people that are used to it, because they'll wonder, you know, where it went, because they used to go in there maybe to add repositories or something like that.
But, yeah, PPAs and stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But again, if you're adding PPAs, you can probably click through the menu and not worry about it too much. Cool. And there's some sort of automatic desktop background rendering thing.
Yeah, I saw a discussion about this. Mark Shuttleworth and Martin Owens were having a discussion on one of the Artwork mailing lists about how there was this theory that, you know, the previous work wallpaper that you mentioned, the blobs.
Yeah.
Well, the theory was that would be kind of dynamic. And so you'd get a different type of wallpaper. Blobs. Yeah, it'd be SVG. And it'd be dynamic based on, I don't know, where you are, time of day, you know, stellar constellations or whatever.
Right,
but that kind of hadn't happened yet. Wasn't ready yet.
Right, you know? So dynamic, endlessly scalable blobs.
Yeah,
cool.
Moving blobs as well. Yeah.
Ones that are based on Brownian motion.
No, we don't do brown.
aubergine
motion.
Auberginian motion.
Oh yes, that is a very aubergine sweater you've got on.
It is.
Yeah, he's very corporate.
So, while Mark's here, we should learn about what's new in KDE, because I have no idea.
Yeah, what's up?
Right, Kubuntu, as I say, I only tried the release candidate, because I tried it on Saturday, so there might be a few things about this which aren't true in the final release, but the big thing is they've upgraded to KDE 4.5,
okay,
which is the latest release. So a few things that came in just from that are things like the system tray icons are now monochrome. Which is
I think you mean notification area.
No, I don't, because on KDE, the plasmoid is definitely called system tray.
Oh my gosh.
How passé.
Dearie. So they've switched to the kind of mono theme icons.
Yeah, it's sort of like sort of white with a greyish outline.
Right, okay.
Looks quite nice, but sort of a bit unexpected. Because everything's perhaps? Sort of...
Yeah, because KDE always strikes me as a colourful, bright,
all the icons were sort of more... Yeah. Sort of high res before.
Poke your eyes out.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
the other notable thing, particularly notable thing, is that they've replaced Conqueror, which was the web browser, the default KDE flagship web browser, with a project called Reconk, which is more like a stripped down Firefoxy type web browser, because Conqueror was more sort of
file manager.
It was file manager, it basically everything viewer.
Right.
If you wanted to view a file of any sort, whether it was on a network or on your computer, you could do it in Conqueror. But then they switched out to using Dolphin when KDE4 started, which is just dedicated to just files.
Wasn't Conqueror one of the big selling points of KDE that it was like, you know, this one simplified user interface that, you know, gets you to everything you ever need
to know? Well, I mean, that's what I like so much about it. Dolphin does all of those things, and I use Firefox for web browsing anyway. But yeah, the notable thing with Reconk is that they've also got rid of what they had before was an installer. They didn't have Firefox installed by default, but they had a Firefox installer installed by default. So it was just like a one-click install, and it was there.
Right.
But now they've got rid of that as well in favour of Reconk. Apparently, it's still there, according to the Kubuntu website, but that might just mean it's in the repositories,
right,
if you want it.
And is Reconk still WebKit-based like Conqueror?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, it's entirely WebKit-based, whereas I think Conqueror was still sort of optional KHTML or WebKit, depending on your preference. And from what I could see, they still don't have Ubuntu 1 set up by default, and there's still no Ubuntu One Music Store in Amarok, which is a shame.
Even though it's disappointing.
Because it's linked into other web-based services like MangaTune and those other sort of things. MangaTune, whatever it's called, Jamendo, yeah. But Ubuntu One Music Store doesn't appear to be there yet. Again, that might have been a release candidate thing that they hadn't finished it or whatever, but it just seems a bit of a shame that it's missing out on it.
Is there 6 months later?
Yeah. Is there an optional extension for it?
None that I could find. Okay. I mean, it's a bit weird. Amarok sort of moved on quite a bit, and it seems to have stripped down because it's a separate project from KDE altogether. So they pull it into Kubuntu. But they've sort of stripped down the sort of optional features. There's no install plugins section in the menus anymore or anything like that, like there used to be. So it might just be that you have to go into the software center and find it in there. Yeah. But I certainly couldn't find it with a sort of cursory glance over the interface, which you'd expect to if it was, you know, pushing that.
Yeah, so, no, that's fair enough.
So is Amarok the default, like, rhythm boxes for Ubuntu?
Yes, yeah.
And can you install Rhythmbox?
Yeah, I mean, you can install on Kubuntu. It's basically just, instead of the Ubuntu desktop package, you've got the Kubuntu desktop package. Mm. So you can have both side by side and XFCE as well if you want, or neither, and just run a server.
But I think in the same way that most Nomi people probably wouldn't want KDE apps.
Yeah, exactly.
KDE people probably don't want Nomi apps.
Yeah, they don't tend to look very nice. Although you can get, it does come also on Kubuntu. There's a sort of default interface for applying your KDE theme to GNOME apps, which works quite well. It works with Firefox
Good.
In general, they don't tend to work as nicely.
And no font yet, apparently.
In KDE, in Kubuntu.
No new font, yeah. Apparently the KDE community are evaluating it.
Evaluating it,
interestingly.
Yeah. But there we go.
We've had some comments from the community as well.
Indeed. And Dennis Lahane says that Maverick Meerkat works straight out of the box and Ubuntu have released a ton of excellence. And we note that he sent this using Thunderbird.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. You know the whole brouhaha about evolution adding sent from Ubuntu at the bottom? Well, when we got this mail from Dennis, it had at the bottom an actual image of the Thunderbird logo and it was kind of sent from Thunderbird.
Hmm.
He must have turned that on by default. He must have turned that on. That wouldn't be there by default.
An actual graphic.
Yeah, logo. Like your company
like
logo.
An HTML email.
Signature. Yeah. I'm not saying anything bad about Dennis. I'm just saying, it was interesting.
I've not seen it before, so
me neither.
Noteworthy. Mm. Next up.
Matt Grove said, I like the new installer where it lets you do the questions while it's already installing. And he also commented that at least they haven't moved the buttons back.
Again. Yes, he's put it in a slightly earthier way.
Yes.
And
Tom Bragg says, I like the integration of items in the What's It area at the top. I assume he's talking about the notification area. I'll stick with the GNOME terminology.
I'm going to stick with What's It area.
So if you click on the speaker icon, you get volume control and music player status. The new netbook-style desktop is okay, works well enough, but feels a little sluggish in comparison to the old one. Although it's not obvious how to open a second window of something like a second terminal window, for example.
Yeah, because everything's full screen.
Right.
So, when you open a terminal, it goes brrp, and goes full screen. That brrp was the sound of something going full screen.
Now who's gesticulating and demonstrating
with my
things
fingers
on the radio.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but Netbook Edition's done that before.
Yeah.
Is it
any
different from that?
Maybe you should install Byobu.
Yeah.
I mean, I sort of know what he means is normally I use Terminator on my computers, the terminal multiplexer thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on my netbook where I have Easy Peasy, which is Netbook Edition, I use just the plain GNOME terminal because you can do tabs and you can't really do split screens and things on a tiny netbook screen anyway. Mm. So give that one a go, Tom.
And Alan Lord says, 1010 Maverick, you've got to love it.
Thanks,
I think
Alan.
He likes it.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Well, don't bowl us over with the detail on that one, Alan.
Well, it was a tweet, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Couldn't fit much in.
140 characters. Well, if you've given Maverick a go, hot off the press, why not send us an email or a tweet or whatever and let us know what you think of it, what you like, and perhaps where you might want to see a bit more polish. So send us an email to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. It's time for the news.
Fresh from divorcing its new overlords at Oracle, the OpenOffice.org community has set up the Document Foundation to safeguard the project. They've temporarily rebranded the Office Suite as LibreOffice, but hope to acquire the OpenOffice.org name from Oracle.
I'm not sure how much of a chance they stand of getting that, to be honest.
Well, didn't Oracle had a response just recently, actually? What day is it? A few days ago, and they said, one of the news articles has reported that Oracle has all but confirmed that it will not be joining the list of contributors to the new OpenOffice offshoot LibreOffice. I can't think of LibreOffice without thinking of Nacho Libre. LibreOffice!
So, do you see Oracle keeping OpenOffice going?
Do you think they care about Open Office?
I don't think they do. Really?
No, exactly, no.
I think they brought Sun for MySQL and ended up with all this other stuff that they don't really know what to do with.
Well, and a bunch of patterns, probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Java.
And Java.
I think those are the two bits they really worry about. Oh, well.
The British government has released a Creative Commons compatible license, which allows the modification, sharing, and commercial exploitation of content released under it. Although use of the license is strongly encouraged, it's not, however, compulsory.
Yes, it's good to see some sort of openness.
So is this for data that the government have and they release?
Yes.
So opendata.gov.org something.
.gov.org.
That one. Tim Berners-Lee's thing. That's what I think of it as.
So I think they can choose to release that under their license. I'm not sure. I'm not aware of anybody who has actually done anything yet. But
there's a couple of exemptions. Additional license criteria. It says you've got to ensure that you don't use the information in a way that suggests any official status or the information provider endorses you or your information. Okay, fair enough. But the second one says ensure that you do not mislead others or misrepresent the information or its source. Surely that's open to interpretation.
Misleading is, I suppose, but easy to cite a source.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what comes out of that, what extra...
Yeah, and the important thing is you can remix it, reuse it, redistribute it, and make a profit from it. You can use it for commercial activities as well.
Oh, that's good. Cool. So hopefully open source community projects that, rely on stuff like postcode data or whatever.
The European Commission is suing UK government for not protecting the privacy of consumers properly following the use of snooping advertising software Form by BT. Consumers who complained after they were put in a trial without being informed by the ISP were told that the Information Commissioner did not have the appropriate powers to investigate. Now, Form is this thing where it watches what you're looking at online and then sort of like Google AdWords, but more global, will put in targeted advertising into pages which subscribe to it.
But it absolutely doesn't know who you are, we promise. Really, it doesn't know who you are.
Just what you're doing.
Yeah. Just every single website you go to.
And it's only their ISP customers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the box is housed inside the ISP.
So it goes through them.
Yeah, so your traffic goes through them and you opt out. You have to opt out. It's not an opt-in thing.
It was only a trial, blah, 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 blah. But the interesting thing about this is that the EU is saying that the British government has got a duty to actually regulate this sort of activity, and they're not doing it at the moment, and hence the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, saying that they can't regulate a private company using people's data sounds a bit odd.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. Especially when they can do it.
Especially when you can do it if it's a public body, so why not a private body?
Yeah.
Microsoft has sued Motorola for patent violation in their Android handsets. It's not clear from the suit whether the allegedly infringing patents are in Motorola's modifications or in the Android codebase.
Is there anyone left not being sued in the mobile phone space?
I'm not. Not yet, anyway.
You barely have a mobile phone.
I have a mobile phone.
Yeah.
And after years of development, it seems, the new version of Gallery has been released. Having learned their lessons from the unpopular 2.0 version, the new release promises to be small, intuitive, fast, and customizable.
Are they going
to
break everyone's URLs again?
Probably. Well, where it says, at the moment it says V2 in the URL, so presumably that's going to break. Going to go to V3 at the very least.
That was the day that I got really annoyed with Gallery, is when I upgraded from 1 to 2. And all the URLs broken. I'm sure there's a way to fix it all, but it's just out the box to press a button and upgrade and then find that the links to all your images that you've used in your blog post, for example, were all broken.
Yeah, not good. But the new version seems to have taken a big usability guy. You've talked about it before.
And I blogged about the first release candidate, I think. So I've not looked at it since then, but I think they've got somebody from, I think it was Open Usability. .org. They had a look at it and they spent a lot of time analysing the user base and talking to people. They did a massive survey, I think, and they stripped it all back so that rather than supporting every database under the sun and every operating system, and they picked the one that they wanted to target. So then they focused
Windows
on
and
it.
SQL Server. Linux and MySQL.
I think it's Linux, MySQL, PHP, probably Windows as well. So they're not supporting like Oracle and DB2 and everything that they could possibly.
Choice is overrated.
well, it's an internal component, isn't it? Yeah. So, Yeah, so it all looks really nice, and you can click on buttons and things instead of having to find obscure drop-down lists everywhere. And yeah, I did do some feedback, and they changed something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Are you going to upgrade yours? Because you use Gallery a lot, don't you?
Not so much since version 2.
No, we stopped at version 2.
I've got a few extra galleries and things I've put up there. But yeah, I'd really like to.
Just wait for Dreamhost to support it.
Oh, is that where your gallery is? I thought it was hosted in your lounge.
No.
Or somewhere.
No. No. It used to be a home-hosted thing, but no, it's not.
Okay. Scott Charney from Microsoft's Trusted Computing Team have suggested that infected or compromised computers should be kicked off the internet. His proposal, presented at a recent security conference, would essentially make ISPs implement a network access control system to prevent compromised computers from connecting.
Yeah, so if you haven't got an up-to-date virus checker and you haven't had a scan in the last 24 hours and you haven't installed your Windows updates or whatever, then you won't be able to get on the network.
Interestingly enough, one of my friends whose housemates apparently had a virus got kicked off by his ISP until they fixed it.
Right.
And wow. they had to basically get it confirmed by a computer expert that they didn't have any viruses on their machine, at which point I installed Ubuntu on his laptop.
Right.
Nice move. Nice move.
Were you the computer expert as well?
I have.
Apparently, they already had a letter from a computer expert, but he just wanted me to check it over just in case it was his fault.
Which letter was it?
Was it a K? Oh, they haven't done that one yet. Sounds a bit like your MOT, you know, just because it's clean on the day you get your certificate doesn't mean you're not dodgy the next day. But yeah, I mean, ISPs have been kicking people off for infringing traffic for a while, but this is actually more proactive. This is the next stage of it, I guess. You know, you have to be in a clean condition in order to connect in the first place.
But he says something like, we should be learning from public health and how, you know, if somebody's really not very well and they shouldn't be out in society, we lock them up in quarantine. It's like, I don't believe that happens very much anymore.
We have to learn from the Victoria.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it doesn't happen very much.
Do we still give people lobotomies?
Google have responded to the lawsuit from Oracle, which claims they have infringed Java patents in Android and claim they haven't. They even claim that Oracle might not exist.
Yeah, this is fantastic. This is one of the... They've responded to all Oracle's points.
Yeah, they really went to town on it as well.
Yeah, apparently it's a bit of a hatchet job. I mean, I'm not a legal expert, you may be shocked to know. But they refute all the claims one by one, and Oracle's first claim is that they are from such and such an address, and they trade in this state, and the reply is like, Google has not got any evidence that this statement is true.
Excellent.
Another salvo in the patent wars. That's all the news. It's time for the events. The UK Unix user group Floss Unconference is this weekend on the 16th of October.
Where?
In
Birmingham. There's like a vague feeling of Birmingham in the room.
A vague feeling of Birmingham. Yeah, I think it's in Birmingham. Check it out.
It is. Birmingham and Midlands Institute.
There we go.
Barcamp Southampton, hosted by SoTech, is happening on November the 27th in Southampton, Beavis Valley. There's two pubs it's happening at now. The Shooting Star, which is sort of in the middle of the valley, and there's the Hobbit, which is up the top, and they've got the bottom bar in there as well, because due to increased interest, they had to get a second venue.
Whoa.
So you have to pick a venue?
Well, no, apparently, because there's only 3 minutes walk between the two, so they're opening the Hobbit bit sort of about midday, I think, because that's when they're expecting people to really arrive in anger.
When the pubs are open.
I must learn about open source technology.
Wow. Well, it's not specifically focused at open source. In fact, it's just sort of general. I think they informally refer to themselves as the Anti-Luddite League.
It's great to see such popularity for this sort of event in Southampton, obviously, which is near where we live.
Which is just around the corner. Yes. And there's lots of very familiar names as I go down the list. Yes, it's basically all of Hampshire Lug.
Hampshire Lug, a few IBMers.
Oh dear.
Hampshire Lug and IBM. Well, there we go. That's
lots of Allens.
And it's free.
Yes, it is free. So make sure you turn up if you've got a ticket.
We have tickets.
Yes, we're going and we're going to turn up.
Yes, so have I.
Cool.
Yes, me too.
Excellent.
Why not come along and say hello?
Tony will be doing his talk about podcasting again.
Well, I might volunteer it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get another
Did you get the email saying thank you for volunteering? What's that? You didn't volunteer. Everyone's a volunteer.
Oh, there. Yes, I got that email.
Yeah. No, I didn't get that email.
You can get Mumbuntu out again.
Oh, yes. All right.
squeeze another few iterations out of these things.
I can't remember what I was going to do.
Just tap dance.
Okay.
We're going to play next an interview with Tim Dobson that I did at the OpenTech event about 4 weeks ago, and Tim talks a little bit about his young rewired state that he's involved in. In fact, one of the projects that we talk a little bit about, I think, in the interview, has got a bit of press recently, which is a project by Isabel Long.
Yeah, she's a Ubuntu member, community contributor, yeah. And yes, keen programmer and developer and all that kind of stuff.
So what's this project got press about?
I don't know. You interviewed Tim.
Yes, but the press has happened since I did the interview, so we don't talk about it very much.
It was about her project to analyse the power usage between government departments and pit them against each other to try and drive down the cost of energy use within government.
And she came up with this at the event that she was there, and it's now been adopted by the Cabinet Office and hosted for her, and they're looking after it. And David Cameron said it's a brilliant thing, apparently.
Yeah.
So that's really good. So that's some of the context of the sort of events that they do at Young Rewired State.
Yeah.
So let's have a listen to the interview. I'm here with Tim Dobson, a good friend of the Ubuntu UK podcast here at OpenTech, and he's been talking about, why don't you tell us what you've been talking about today?
So I've been talking about Young Rewired State Manchester. Young Rewired State is an event across the UK where young people get together with kind of open data hackers and build applications with government release open data.
Okay, that sounds really sort of straightforward, but I bet it's not. What sort of data and what sort of hacking and all sorts?
Well, you're right, it's certainly not trivial. Basically, it's very much a Rewired State, the organisation that run the whole kind of the nationwide event, give very much kind of open book to young developers. So I went to, let me tell you a bit of a story about how this whole thing got started. Last year, Young Rewired State, which is an organisation that runs Hack Days about government open data, ran their first Young Rewired State event. It was a great event. It was 2 days at Google HQ in London, and they paid sponsorship money. They paid for the expenses and accommodation of people from around the UK, young people around the UK, to travel to the event. It was fantastic. Over 2 days, couldn't have asked for any better. But it was a bit short at 2 days, and it was quite centralised on London. So when it came round to doing it again this year, they were keen to decentralise it around the UK because sponsorship money has become a lot more difficult to find in recent days, but also to kind of decentralise it and move it away from just London being the core hub. So having enjoyed it so much at last year, I thought, well, why don't I run an event, a local event up in Manchester, so we can kind of show the whole of the UK what Manchester has to offer on kind of a national scale. So we put together an event and tried to gather together various different strands of the community, and the event happened at the start of August.
Okay, so how did the event go? How many people turned up and what did you get up to?
I think the event was definitely a success. To be honest, we left it a little bit to the last minute, so we only got 10 people, which we'd kind of been hoping for a little bit more. But the event definitely went really a lot better than I'd expected, to be honest. We got together in Mad Lab, which is a hack space in Manchester, who kindly kind of offered their space, and an open data cooperative in Manchester, Substance.coop. Kindly kind of sponsored food and kind of people time from various kind of open data hackers during that time frame. We kind of wanted to make the one in Manchester special because we really want to highlight kind of what Manchester's all about and the big open data scene that's going on in Manchester. So we invited Paul Robinson from Open Data Manchester, which is a local user group who are campaigning for the release of open data and local government up in Manchester, to come down and talk about some of the successes and difficulties that he's been having getting local councils and local government bodies to release open data. And so one of the cool things that he mentioned was the GMPTE, the the Manchester Transport Executive have recently released a load of timetable information about all the bus timetables in Manchester. So that's currently now fairly open data. It's been released to the world. And so this was kind of this, and we also tried to kind of broaden the young people's horizons a bit. So we took them on a tour of Melbourne IT's data centre, just to show that kind of computers isn't all about sitting in the kind of a basement hack space and talking about eating pizza, which was obviously great fun.
So why is it important to get young people involved in this for you? Because, I mean, generally IT is fairly age agnostic. If you've got the skills and the interests, you can get involved.
So there's a lot of young people out there who are really kind of very skilled, but they're not necessarily connected with the rest of the community, and they're not necessarily aware of what standard ways of working are. So when you get young people going through school and going through their university degrees and whatnot, they quite often are aware of that there's an IT industry out there, but take all the knowledge of IT from their education. Now, that's not necessarily a great idea when it comes to it, because you generally find that, well, employers basically scream and howl when they get university students coming through because they don't really know their stuff based on the courses. There's also another kind of perspective on it, which is more the rewired state perspective, in that the older people have different kind of perspectives on what's useful for the data. So one of the cool applications that one of the guys came up with during Young Rewired State Manchester was really quite specific to being a young person. So a lot of when you go to school, you have to put up with content filtering systems in schools. Now, if you are doing schoolwork, sometimes these can get in the way. So you might find that the blog, which probably has information from a history professor or a geography lecturer at some university, is blocked because for some reason the whole of Blogspot is blocked. But there's very little information about kind of how this affects people and whatnot. So one of the guys built a little application that basically uses Ajax to check whether each of a list of predefined sites is available, and then kind of reports it back to a central server. So we can kind of come up with get some real statistics going of what sites young people around the UK can actually visit, and whether it's kind of impeding their educational learning. It's more to kind of promote discussion rather than kind of make any specific agenda, but we feel that it could be quite an interesting thing. When we, well, obviously the whole hack week was during the summer holidays, but we put out the prototype to public sector and big corporates people out on Twitter and said, please, will you come and test this for us on your internal network and see what happens?
And did they?
They did, in quite large numbers, and we had some very interesting results. Please don't properly quote me off the top of my head, but I believe the Department of Culture, Media and Sports can access WikiLeaks, but can't access Wikipedia or something.
Nice, that makes sense.
Yes, it's good for us, but probably not for them.
And that's a very different set of filtering restrictions than you might expect in an educational environment as well, where there are different concerns.
Absolutely, and we were just kind of really just going out there to test whether the code works, but it turns out that it actually probably could have quite interesting uses across the corporate and public sector as well.
So that was just one project that came out of that week. Were there any other interesting projects you can think of?
There were quite a few interesting projects and quite a few... We kind of went through the whole week with the idea was to make it useful and beneficial, but also not be incredibly dull. So there's quite a lot of rather fun prototypes that we built. So not that these are the most useful ones, like you asked, but some of the guys came up with some HTML5 demos that kind of, you had a spinning wheel, like Wheel of Fortune of the spending by government departments, and then when it stopped you kind of get a Dalek like exterminate, and that segment disappears.
Nice.
Yeah. But some of the more useful ones, well, one guy kind of reimagined up my street in a kind of different kind of way.
Which is the repairs thing, isn't it? If you've got a fault with a street lamp or a pothole, is that right?
No. Up my street is a site where, well, let me describe the site in that one of the young guys built. So basically, when you're moving to a new area, you want to know a little bit about the area and what the kind of background of the whole area you're moving to is, rather than just kind of accidentally moving to an area that's got really high crime rates. So you kind of pulled in crime rates and education stats, and so you could select various properties and see what kind of the risks and benefits of moving to that area were. And considering this is probably from someone who's not even completed their A-levels yet and probably wouldn't have built this otherwise, I find this kind of thing stunning.
Okay, so are you planning on doing another one?
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the other applications that got built, as I mentioned earlier, the Manchester Transport Executive released a load of bus timetables. So two of the guys, just kind of for a bit of fun, put together a kind of timetable application that basically, when you typed the bus number in, showed you the bus route, and then you could click on a bus stop and view the times. This is actually really useful because they turned it into a mobile application, and suddenly GMPTE, the Manchester Transport Executive, was calling them in for kind of press interviews and getting Manchester Evening News involved. So I think we're definitely going to do another one. It's probably going to be next year, but I think more great things are on the horizon that may or may not be done kind of under the Rewired State banner.
Okay, this is all quite a long way from one of the things that you were involved in before, which is when you very generously sponsored the first OgCamp event with Pokebook. This is all very serious and grown up.
Well, one would like to think that. I'm going to have to go into this now. So we were in the pub after one day. Me and some of the mentors were in the pub after Young Rewired State one of the days, and we were thinking that it was actually kind of a bit, how could we interpret the data in new and interesting ways? So some people suggested interpretive dance, but none of us can really dance. So what we thought was that we should kind of bring open data back to kind of the young people, and we should write a Young Rewired State rap. Now, I'm not very good at writing raps, thankfully. So I was just chatting to someone at a technical meet saying, yeah, we were trying to write this rap. And they said, oh, I'll go away and do it. So at 2 a.m. the next morning, they emailed me the lyrics. I recorded them in two goes, and there's now a kind of lip-synced video as well.
Well, I'm glad to see you've not totally lost your talent for the slightly more trivial side of life. So where can people find out more?
Sure. So if you want to look at any of the demos that we built up in Manchester, you can go to dev.dfey.org. Also, you should check out rewiredstate.org. There's a list of kind of all the projects that all the centres around Britain, those centres in Norwich, Edinburgh, London, Brighton, and all the applications, everybody in the whole kind of national event are listed on the Rewired State site in London. I'm at tdobson.net, and I think that's it.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
No problem at all.
And now we've got some command line love.
You've got to say it was sexier.
Yeah. And now, this isn't just any command line love. This is Alan Pope's command line love.
That's too sexy.
Aya!
That's not sexy enough.
Oh, okay.
Right. What have we got, Alan?
Let's suppose that you get your email and it's on some hosted server somewhere and you want to back it up.
Like Gmail?
Like Gmail, like any kind of email that's accessible via IMAP.
Okay.
The web. Common protocol thing. There's a program called Offline IMAP, which you can run. It's in the Ubuntu repository. And you configure it with a little config file,
okay.
And then you just run offline IMAP, and it will go off and get your mail from the server and bring it down and store it wherever you tell it to, on your local machine or on a server somewhere else.
So how do you then access that mail store?
Well, you don't have to access it. I mean, it could just be a backup. Or you could use it as a way to get mail from one service to another. So, for example, if you're migrating away from Gmail and you want to have your own hosted server, it's a way to get your mail out of Gmail and onto your own box. But you can access it once you've pulled the mail out using any traditional mail client. So, you know, you could point your Thunderbird at it. You could point your Mutt or whatever mail client you use at that directory full of mail, and it should be able to read that as if it was just like a folder full of mail.
Do you have to be running your own IMAP server to do that?
No.
Okay.
Well,
presumably you could.
You could. The point about offline IMAP is it's just the syncing thing.
Right.
It doesn't. It's not an IMAP server. It's it's actually an IMAP client, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Because it connects to the IMAP server and pulls all your mail down. But the really cool thing, and the thing you have to be quite careful of, is it's bidirectional. So if you did pull all your mail down with offline IMAP, and then you point your mail client at that local store, and then you think, nah, I don't really want this. And then in your mail client, you hit the delete button. Next time you run offline IMAP, it will send that delete request off to the mail server and delete all your mail.
Right. Have you done that?
Once you know that, no, I haven't.
Okay.
Because I read the manual. But once you know that, you know, I think it's actually configurable. You might be able to turn that off. But it's a really cool way to synchronize multiple accounts, lots of folders from one place to another.
Cool.
It's time for the bit about Ubuntu.
And what's in the bit this time? Laura?
OpsView, who do network monitoring on Linux, have teamed up with Canonical to try and push the enterprise adoption of OpsView on the Ubuntu server.
Groovy.
Yeah.
That's Nagios based, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it's the front, sort of glamorous front end to Nagios. So I think this means you're going to be able to get it through the partner repository, get OpsView through the partner repository. And I presume this is the enterprise edition. You can already get the community edition of OpsView on Ubuntu just from their public repository. So I guess this is all the added goodness.
You've used it, haven't you?
Yeah. And they sponsored OCamp as well.
Oh, they did, yes.
So.
Oh, yeah, we remember that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've used it in two different places that I worked, and it's great. I really like it. So, yeah, and good to see kind of more networking-y tools getting adoption on Ubuntu.
The Journal of Strategic Management Education has published a white paper called The Role of Serial Entrepreneurs in the Internationalization of Global Startups, a Business Case, which focuses on Mark Shuttleworth and Canonical.
That's easy for you to say.
Not so much. I can't read the paper because it's £40 and I haven't bought it.
It's not open source.
That's how they make their money.
That's so typical of Canonical.
That's how these entrepreneurs make all their cash. You've got to spend £40 to read it.
Well, this is the journal that's selling the article, not Canonical, I should point out.
Okay, fair point.
I was going to say, yes, I remember buying Mark a pint in the pub, but I don't remember getting one back.
Yeah.
That's how they make their money.
Yeah, that's it. But it's an interesting idea, the fact that... it says serial entrepreneurs, so, you know, using the idea of sort of angel investors or whatever in different companies coming and starting all these things up and setting them going. And people who do it more than once, how can they be consistently successful? Is it just potluck, or have they actually got some interesting skills or techniques? Who knows? With enough money, any of us could be an entrepreneur if we read this paper.
If only we had the money to buy the paper. We'd be able to have money papers.
A new cloud platform has arrived in Ubuntu called OpenStack, which is an alternative to the current choice, which is Eucalyptus. So this is led by Rackspace, I think, OpenStack.
And NASA.
Oh, right, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. And actually, there's just a blog post just today from Soren Hansen, who, according to his blog, is not the golfer, Soren Hansen, but the well-known sysadmin who used to work for Canonical now works for Rackspace. And he's posted a great big blog post about how parts of OpenStack are now available in Ubuntu Maverick.
Oh, right, okay. So I thought it was going to be held back for 11.04.
Yeah, this isn't a release. It's as he details in his blog post, it's a snapshot, but he said it's in pretty good shape for people to try it out.
So this is basically a system for creating a cloud with Ubuntu.
Yes, based on the new OpenStack. Made, as I said, by Rackspace and NASA and community as well.
And AMD and Dell and Intel as well. So it's got some good backing, according to this report here.
Yeah, you can kind of see why they've kind of embrace this as well as, or maybe instead of eucalyptus?
Eucalyptus is based on Amazon, of course, which at the moment is the dominant player in cloud. But, yeah, so maybe it's swinging the other way. Interesting. One to watch, that one.
At a recent Lucid release party, not so recent, Dustin Kirkland bought a round of beer and commented that he, for the same price, he could have bought everyone in the pub an hour free on the Ubuntu server runtime in the cloud. So somebody thought this was a good idea, one of which seems to be our own Dave Walker.
Yes.
He thinks anything involving beer is a good idea.
But this doesn't involve beer.
And flip-flops.
So this Sunday, to celebrate 10-10-10, Canonical are paying for everybody to have a free hour running their own Ubuntu server instance in the Amazon EC2 cloud.
Yeah, and then pick up the tab for an hour of computing.
And you set up your SSH key pair and stuff. And
oh, it's all pretty much automatic, actually. It'll get your SSH. If you've already got a Launchpad account, okay, you give them your Launchpad account, it'll get your SSH key from there.
Oh, right.
And you're laughing. You can get straight in.
Cool. That's good, because you don't want to spend your whole hour trying to get it working.
Trying to sort out the
maybe we should have a competition so you could do the most in an hour.
I was actually thinking that. We should ask our listeners to do it. If you go to 10.cloud.ubuntu.com, you can sign up there. So it's the number 10.cloud.ubuntu.com. Okay. You can sign up for an hour. So you've got nothing to lose. Sign up for an hour of Amazon EC2. Tell us what you did with it, or if you're not, you know, don't want to try it out yet, what you would do with it.
Okay. And what can they win?
An hour in the cloud.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so
if they use 1 hour productively, then we can make them have another hour.
No.
Somebody's going to put their hand in the pocket.
As well, all of the sort of 50p it costs for an hour.
Yeah, which, to be fair, Mark was the one who said competition, I think. So I think technically
that's a competition. They can win Mark for an hour.
I thought I just said we should see.
Oh, right. Okay, maybe there isn't a competition. But yeah, let us know what you could do with your hour. It's quite a small amount of time to do anything hugely instructive with. So
I don't know. You could spend an hour doing something like...
you could sync your offline IMAP store.
Learning a programming language, you know, for an hour. Get started with Python or something like that.
Okay.
Or some other, you know, server scripting something. I don't know.
Okay, because you couldn't install Python on your desktop.
Well, maybe some people have restricted desktops. Oh, shut up.
Get started very quickly.
Install SSH into an
EC2
machine.
Yes, maybe. This is all going horribly wrong.
It sounds like a great idea.
The Fridge website, which was a popular news gathering source, has been rebranded, renamed, and it's now Ubuntu News.
Ubuntu-news.org, I believe.
Yes.
Okay, so what was wrong with the old one?
Well, it's tricky. It's arguable nobody ever went there. And some of the guys in the news team are trying to raise the profile of this news site, because it's kind of semi-official. You know, it's run on, or the Fridge always was traditionally run on Canonical hardware, and, you know, people from within the project were posting news articles to it. But the idea behind the news site is that that same team are posting news, but also they've got a little box on the right hand side, and if you've got any news, you can post it straight in there, send it to the team, they'll edit it and, you know, check it and post it online,
make sure it's worthy.
Yeah,
cool. Okay, and you were involved in that, I think, weren't you?
I helped out a little bit. Yeah, I helped them get the WordPress install set up, although it was a bit of a catastrophe yesterday, because it was running on a community member's VPS, who shall remain nameless, and there was a bug on the VPS front end. And they deleted a development VPS, and it went and spidered around and deleted all their VPSs.
Oops.
Yeah. So that was a bit not good. Double plus ungood. So they moved it to another VPS somewhere else.
Another.
And everything's all tickety-boo. But the really good thing is the team behind it, a bunch of community guys, they had backups, they had everything set up so that they could just register a new VPS somewhere else and bring the whole thing back online, and it was all back up in a couple of hours, as long as it takes to DNS to propagate. Really good.
Brilliant. Okay, and well, check it out.
It's got all the new theme, and if you've got any news, send it to ubuntunews.org.
Ubuntu One's pricing structure has changed.
Ooh, how?
The original Ubuntu One is now called Ubuntu One Basic, which still gives you 2 gigabytes for free.
Okay.
But you can now buy sort of upgrade packs in 20 gigabyte chunks. I think,
because before you could buy, you had the free one, or you had 50 gigs which you paid for, and that was it. So you can now buy increments of 20 gigs.
Yes, $3 a month or $30 a year,
which makes it more competitive with other services like Dropbox.
So you could have, is there any ceiling at all now, just as much as you're prepared to pay for?
Looks like it. Because, yeah, I think Dropbox has three levels, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got 2 gig, 50 gig, 100 gig for right. Dropbox. But the thing about Dropbox is it has other features that Ubuntu One doesn't have. So that's where it kind
like
of...
Like a Windows client.
There's a Windows client and a Mac client. There's also the referral scheme. So you can give someone a referral link to Dropbox and you get a bit of extra space up to 8 gig or something it is now.
250 gig chunks.
Yeah, 250 gig.
And the person signing up gets it as well.
Yeah. Although not if you refer to someone else who's in your same workplace, because they spot that you're both on the same IP and they refuse to give you the referral because you could be on the same computer. I experienced this myself by referring the person sat next to me. So it's not perfect, Dropbox, but I think Ubuntu One's certainly become more competitive. And the fact that it's pre-installed by default is certainly a winner.
Mm, and there's the Ubuntu One Mobile Contact Sync as well, which was available from the 7th of October for $3.99 a month, or $40, the best part of the year.
So if you want to have your contacts synced with your desktop desktop information manager, or whatever they call it, PIM, Evolution, or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And that's all in the bit about Ubuntu this time.
And it's time for some feedback.
Lots of it.
Yep. Richard Gunn asks us to...
Please refrain from using the term geek. It's not big, it's not clever, and it definitely isn't cool. Ubuntu is a great OS, and if the ordinary people who currently use Windows think that Linux is only for geeks, then they're less likely to consider using it.
Well,
I think he typed it in that tone.
Okay. He is kind of right.
Well, I know a lot of geeks who use Windows.
On the other hand, if you're listening to a podcast about an operating system, you're probably a bit of a geek.
Geeks are cool. Bow ties are cool. Fezzes are cool. Geeks are cool. These are things we know now.
Someone actually emailed me a photo. Peter Nicolaidis from the Fresh Ubuntu podcast emailed me a picture of Martin Owens at a wedding on 10/10/10 wearing a bow tie and holding a fob watch.
Brilliant.
Does that make them cool?
Yeah.
He is a geek.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's nothing wrong with the term geeks. Geeks are cool. Geeks are mainstream.
I'm a bit worried. I'm worried that this was as a result of me in the last show referring to myself as a geek.
You are a geek.
I am a geek. I have a t-shirt that says I am a geek. No. And I make no apology for that, I'm afraid.
You can't divert it.
I think I might get a t-shirt that says I am not a geek. Or one that says he is a geek.
Yes.
With an arrow pointing to him.
Or he is Spock, something like that.
You'd always have to sit in that seat.
Ha ha! My plan is complete.
What if invited him?
What if you had the arrow on a pivot that rotated?
Yes.
Now that wouldn't be at all geeky.
Tony points at his stomach.
Actually, not a rotating one, an LED display.
Ooh, okay.
With an arrow on it. With an arrow that kind of goes like a banner, like one of those moving signs. Makes that noise as well.
He's moving his finger across his tummy.
Yeah, and the other way as well.
And the other hand.
Yeah, I've got two.
Well, I knew the special one. Right, Alan Bell added the Holmwood School in London to our collection of institutions which have logos very similar to the Ubuntu one. And in fact, this is very, very similar.
Yeah, when you say similar...
This is the same with different colours.
It is the logo with someone who's got a little pipette and picked up their company colours and dropped them on the three things. Although they haven't done the rotating the colours round, have they?
No, they've matched colour heads with bodies, haven't they?
Mm. If you're listening to this and you want a bit of a laugh, go to thsl.org.uk and you'll see the logo right at the top.
Maybe they have the Holmwood School Ubuntu as their in-house operating system and that's the logo.
Maybe they should.
Mm. Or maybe they did theirs first.
Ah,
prior art.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's an educational branding company out there who's onto a good thing.
Regular listener Matthew Phillips wrote to tell us about his project.
Gnack track?
Is that Gnack track or am I all right?
I'd go Gnack track.
Gnack track.
It's an Ubuntu-based penetration testing distro based on 10.04 and includes the GNOME interface. It all started off when I needed a testing platform for my job. It made sense to build my own with the tools that I want. After the first release on my personal website, it soon became clear that it would need its own site. Fortunately, I've received loads of help from the community, as maintaining a distro on my own was hard work. The website can be seen at www.gnacktrack.co.uk, and that's Gnack, G-N-A-C-K.
When I needed a testing platform for my job, it made sense to build my own. I'm not sure I follow that logic. It might have been fun and interesting and rewarding.
So presumably he's named it Knack Track after Backtrack.
Yeah, I guess so, because Backtrack's based on KDE, so GNACTrack will be, the, as he says, based on GNOME. So same kind of thing, okay, but with GNOME front-end.
Okay, cool.
Interesting, because from my use of Backtrack in the past, it doesn't really use any KDE applications, just the desktop environment.
Well, one thing I did find with Backtrack was actually that I quite like the KDE network thingy where you scan for wireless, just the basic.
The wireless finder application, yeah.
It's a similar one that's in on the ASUS EPC, the original Zandros thing. I always thought that was quite nice.
You know? See, I'd only really use the command line tools for...
Yeah, so I'm not a geek.
See if I could. I never said I wasn't a geek.
Presumably, most of the testing tools are command line anyway. Nmap and Nessus and stuff.
Yeah.
I know some of them have got GUIs on the front end, but cool, interesting project.
Worth taking a look. Yeah.
Greg Thompson emailed in about the Balsamic Interface mock-up software we mentioned in episode 16.
I was interested in your discussion about developers using graphical tools to generate mock-ups. You mentioned the program Balsamic a few times, so I decided to check it out. I was rather surprised to find that Balsamic is not free software. A quick search for an alternative led me to the Firefox add-on Pencil.
Ooh.
I did have a very quick look at this, and it's actually pretty good. I mean, I didn't try using it or anything, but it seemed to have quite a lot of things that you could drag onto the canvas and mock up with, and then I ran out of time to look at it.
I'll certainly take a look at it. I mean, it sounds like it might not have some of the things that Balsamic has, like the ability to, say, add your own icons and, you know, have it actually interact. When you click on a link, it can change to a different mock-up. But I don't know. I'll have to have a look and find out if it does that, because otherwise it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I think Greg has a fair point that we didn't actually say that Balsamic is commercial proprietary software.
Although, apparently, if you're a do-gooder, which they do include in that definition, open source contributors, they'll give you a free license. They certainly gave me one.
All right. Okay,
they'll
cool.
also give you, I think, one or two free licenses if you'll go and present about it somewhere.
And if you're if you teach computing and you want to use it with your students, they'll give you licenses free in your entire class.
Wow.
So they certainly seem to get the open source thing, they just don't use it.
Interesting, because about a year ago, Canonical sent out a mail accidentally to basically everyone on this big mailing list, which was a link to get a free copy of Balsamic. And that got retracted pretty quickly.
Yeah, because MPT uses it. He mentioned it when we interviewed him.
Yeah, I think he really likes the fact that he can do a mock-up that doesn't lead you to believe that it's anywhere near done.
Yeah.
John commented on our live show from Dublin, saying...
Dense philosophical discussions about freedom are dull and depressing. Let's get back to the light, fun format that made this show a success. Yeah, thanks, John. Did he not hear the boarding pass story? I mean, that you couldn't get any more light-hearted and fun than that.
Yeah.
And Dave was wearing flip-flops.
Yeah.
You know, that's fun and light-hearted.
Yeah. He has a point.
Well, it's difficult when you've got an audience in front of you. You can't necessarily do the same things as we do in our normal show. We tried to do that in Dublin, really, for the first time. So it was quite interesting to see how...
Yeah, and it's difficult because none of us are, you know, professional radio artists. So, you know, we're kind of winging it just a little bit.
That's always the fallback position.
Yes. Yeah. We haven't got a clue what we're doing. That's our excuse.
I quite like the philosophical stuff, really. Anybody can read out the news.
Yeah, sometimes we can't actually do that.
But for me, getting into the details of some of these debates is actually more interesting than just sort of saying what it is.
And indeed, one of the dense philosophical discussions was about performance-limited processors, and Ehud wrote to say...
Any processor manufactured today will, at most, be the cutting edge of what we can produce today. A locked processor will underperform to today's standards. When you unlock it in 4 years' time, there'll be better processors in the market, which will cost less. Secondly, it will need to have the same hardware as an unlocked chip, and will take the same man-hours to develop, or even more, since the lockdown mechanisms require development too. If anything, the lockdown chip will cost as a full-blown card costs today, and unlocking will make the price much higher. Even if the first few cycles, Intel and the ones who follow will portray this as a cheaper card, in the long run, the margin will narrow and eventually will pay more.
John's onto something.
Sorry, Ehud?
No, John.
Sorry, I'm with you, yeah. I sort of know what he means. I mean, you were talking about, you know, re-enabling old hardware and stuff, but, you know, a four-year-old processor, even with a bit of a speed boost, is still going to be a four-year-old processor.
Yeah, fair point.
And Sorin Silagi said,
I highly doubt that if a shop charges $50 to switch on the hyper-threading on a processor, then that means that I'm basically getting a $50 discount by choosing to go with the locked version. the way I see this whole thing is like when you go to McDonald's and they say, would you like the extra large one? It's only 30 cents more. And by that, I mean it's just marketing designed to prey on customer behaviour.
Yeah, I think someone had a habit of writing us very long emails, but I think I agree with this little bit that I pulled out from his email. It seems like that kind of, do you want to supersize? Do you want to go large with that?
Yeah.
To me, that's my big worry about it. But yeah, it's interesting, kind of nobody seems to be thoroughly in favour of it. Everybody seems to be quite sceptical that it's been written into the show.
Relatively in favour.
Yeah, you were in the show, but the feedback we've had, I think, has been kind of mostly sceptical. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously a fair amount of scepticism out there in the big wide world.
And finally, we had an email from Marvel Shigama in Zimbabwe.
Your podcast is great. I just stumbled on it recently and I downloaded all the episodes and I'm learning so much from them. I'm working on season 1 and season 3, so I won't have to play catch up all the time. I like the discussions you had on pronunciation. Ubuntu's Ubuntu Linux. I am writing
Linux.
I'm writing this from Zimbabwe, so I know how Ubuntu should be pronounced, but Linux and Zubuntu, Xubuntu, ..
Thanks, that's very kind of you to email in, and we're really sorry you're having to listen through all of those other episodes.
Nobody's making him do it, he wants to do it.
Well, voluntarily, yes.
It is great to have emails from everybody who listens around the world, really is fantastic, and to know we've got listeners out in Zimbabwe is brilliant. Yeah, it'd be great to if you could email it back in, perhaps, and tell us how you use Ubuntu and
how you pronounce Linux.
Yeah, how you pronounce Linux. But no, perhaps say how you use Ubuntu, whether you use it at work or at college or university or whatever it is you're doing. That'd be really interesting to find out. And that's all of your feedback. Thank you for listening, and you can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, which is podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And you can find voicemail numbers, Twitter, Identica, our Facebook groups on there, and all sorts of things to find out how to get in touch with us. Let us know what you think of the show, or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. See you later.
Bye.
Ian Lane.